Welcome to the Athletes on the Rise, Rise Up podcast, the podcast where all you athletes out there are going to learn how to become better, whether that be from a skills point of view, a sports performance, strength and conditioning, speed and agility, mental, you know, the mental side of things. We're going to be bringing you the details that you need to know to help elevate your game in whatever sport you might be competing in. So today's guest is Skyler Boland. Skyler plays professionally over in Europe. He plays professional basketball for Wurzburg, Germany in the top league. And he comes from humble beginnings and has worked his way up. You know, he started off at his local high school in Arkansas, you know, went on to a Division II at Missouri Southern, where he was an All-American and Conference Player of the Year. And his experiences has brought him, you know, throughout the entire world. He's been to Australia. He's been through Germany, obviously. He's been in Sweden and Denmark. And, you know, the sport of basketball has been very kind to him because of the type of work that he's put in. So hope you enjoy this podcast. You know, pay attention to some of the details that we'll be going into. We'll be talking about some of the processes that he's gone through to get to the levels that he's at. And, you know, we'll be doing it in kind of an entertaining way as well. So sit back, be ready to learn, and we're going to have some fun. Coach Eric Budansky here from Athletes on the Rise on the Rise Up podcast, here with my friend and former teammate, Skyler Boland over in Germany. How you doing, Skyler?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Just trying to stay healthy over here and in this quarantine life with my wife. So, but all good, man. No complaints.
Okay, good. So you're staying safe and healthy over there, practicing your social distancing?
Oh, yeah. That's a must. Wifey's due any day now with our baby boy. And so we have really limited our social contact. So it's been nice, though, just the two of us and just to kind of wind down before the little guy gets here.
Yeah. When is he due? It's like early next week, right?
Yes, he is. We have a C-section scheduled for Monday. So 3 days, and life changes drastically.
Yeah. And what's the name? You got the name picked out?
We do. Little Luca. 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 Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Little homage to Doncic, or
you're saying? Not really, but also, I mean, he's obviously a big time basketball player. So, you know, that doesn't hurt at all, but you know, you've been to Denmark and you know how it is, pronouncing names. So we wanted something that, that both sides of the family could pronounce the exact same. Right. So that was one of the main reasons.
Right. Now to just kind of introduce you a little bit more to people out there. So Skyler, I met Skyler when I played for Horsens IC in Horsens, Denmark. And, you know, before that, I was in different parts of Denmark. He played in Australia. He'd have played in a bunch of different places. And what we're going to go through here today is we're going to talk a little bit about his experiences in the basketball community as a player, starting off from when he was young all the way to where he is now. And just really give a good idea of what he's had to do to get to where he is right now. He's playing top league in Germany, which is one of the best levels of basketball there possibly is in this world. And so, yeah, we're gonna talk about the path a little bit here. So
sounds good.
Let's get after it. So when you were let's start off when you're younger. You know, when did you first pick up a basketball, so to speak?
Yeah. You know, I've asked my parents that multiple times, and you know, both of my parents actually were at one point basketball coaches. I mean, I've had a ball in my hand since I can remember. My mom was telling Camilla the story. I think she had me, my birthday's in the summer, and so she had me on July 13th, and I think there was 5 or 6 days later, she had me in my car seat on the bench of a team camp that she was coaching. So it was starting early. Yeah, it started early. And you know,
immersion.
So I've just always been around the game, since I can remember, man. I'm from a big sports family. Like I said, both my parents were coaches. My dad still is. My mom's a volleyball coach. My grandfather is in the Hall of Fame of Arkansas for basketball and baseball coaching. So, I've been around it as long as I can remember, man.
So speak to that a little bit. I mean, you hear about, you know, these athletes as they come up that more and more seem to be coming from backgrounds where their parents have played a sport. So what role did your dad play in your life and in your development, especially in those early ages?
Yeah, I
mean, and your mom as well. They were both coaches.
Right. Yeah, I mean, just being around the sport obviously pushed me to work on the game and stuff. You know, obviously they coached high school age kids, and you know, me seeing that level, obviously when I was young, I wanted to do exactly what they were doing. And so I think it, you know, my dad would throw me in there in drills, you know, when I was of age, and, you know, maybe obviously I wasn't doing as well, but, you know, it pushed me to try even harder and stuff. And, you know, I think there is a fine line, and some guys maybe would get burnt out or, you know, grow tired of practicing or playing. But for me, it never really reached that level for whatever reason. And I've just always enjoyed working and always tried to be the best that I can.
Yeah. So speaking off that a little bit, as far as not getting burnt out, you know, you see some parents out there that they're just pushing their kids, and you can see it. Like, the kid doesn't want to be there. So right. Like, how do you feel like your parents were able to balance that? Hey, we're going to expose you to this. If you want to do it, great. Like, if not, cool. But how did they work with you to allow you to just kind of experience it and grow it on your own,
right,
and fall in love with it?
Right. No, I mean, for me, I honestly never remember it being any type of struggle on their part or my part. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, it's different from parent to child, you know, everyone is different, but I just remember always wanting to have a ball in my hand, whether when I was growing up, it was baseball or basketball. You know, I always was one sport to the next. And, you know, we did the travel ball stuff in both sports, but I don't think it was ever too over the top. You know, it was a lot more relaxed and laid back when I was young. And, you know, from what I see these days, it's a lot more ramped up and all year round. And a lot of I've seen, you know, obviously the big debate is, should you specialize in one sport? And, you know, that just wasn't the case when I was growing up, and that didn't happen. But yeah, for me, it was never a struggle. I always wanted to be with my friends, playing ball, having fun. And I just always enjoyed it.
So you know, let's kind of talk about grade school here a little bit. What was your balance between, hey, I'm just playing basketball, and hey, like I'm working, I'm drilling, and I'm trying to get better. Like, what do you feel the balance was at that stage?
I think that, you know, I always wanted to be like those guys that my dad coached, you know? So like, I always took it on as a challenge. You know, I would get my butt beat in practice from the older guys, and I always wanted to just get better and better and better. And of course, like, you know, when you see results, I think that's when it gets fun. And so I think I always tried to work on things that I wasn't good at and saw them as challenges. And for me, that was what made it fun. Mm-hmm. And of course, also when you play with your friends and stuff, you know, that obviously adds that level of fun and excitement as well. And I think that was, you know, we had a very good group of guys growing up, and we were very close. And, you know, there was that obviously was a big factor as well, was the environment that we were in.
Right. So when you were, let's talk a little bit about when you were going to your dad's practices at those high schools a little bit. So what were a lot of things that he was working on at that time that were like, oh man, this is tough, but I'm having fun with this. I'm going to work on this. What type of things was he doing at that time?
Yeah. I mean, my dad is a big defensive guy, but you know, at the junior high and high school level, it's just skill, dribble, pass, shoot. And I mean, he's a big skill guy, and just, you know, I think from what I remember was just nonstop working on the fundamentals of basketball, you know, and then once you master that, I remember, you know, then you try, then you do the things that you're not so good at the next level. But that's what I remember, was just always working on your handles, your left-handed passing, your weak-handed passing.
Right, right.
You know,
that's missed so much. Even at higher levels, you see some of those things are missed, and they lead to turnovers.
Absolutely.
And things like that. It's crazy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think even to this day, I do one of the same warm-ups I did since I was a kid, you know, just two ball dribbling, you know, one ball stationary dribbling, and, you know, those things like you can never get too good at. So I really believe in those, working on those fundamentals and those quote unquote easy things that you take for granted.
Right. All right. And then another big part of the game, obviously, is footwork. So, I mean, you're talking about, as you were saying that, you know, you worked a lot on ball handling, dribbling, passing, shooting. Can you come into some of the details where, as you were learning the game, you know, things that just started to be like, oh, wow, like if I do it like this, this is, you know, this makes me better. If I do it like this, I can see when I'm playing with my friends, you know, this move is working. Like what were some key things that's, you know, whether it be in triple threat or some dribble moves,
right,
when it came to footwork, that you started to hone in on and that started to get you kind of better to, and made you progress and see those improvements that continue to motivate you.
Right. I mean, it's those small details, man. That's what my parents and my coaches at a young age, like I was very fortunate to have very good coaches when I was younger. And it's those small details, you know, the footwork on a hesitation move, the, you know,
right,
swinging your shoulders, right, through when you go between the legs to really get your body going, yeah, in the opposite direction. You know, these small details are so important. And, you know, these small things obviously add up to big things. And, you know, the footwork coming off screens, you know, I didn't really even understand all this stuff, footwork stuff, until later on in high school and college, when I was actually strong enough to shoot off the move and everything. And it was just, mm-hmm, you know, you just really have to learn step by step and challenge yourself. And, you know, obviously watching guys in college, like I remember, you know, I wanted to be like JJ Redick when I was younger, and his footwork was just phenomenal, mm-hmm, coming off screens and handling the ball was just unbelievably good. And, you know, you watch those guys and you try to imitate that stuff.
Right. Yeah. So you spoke a little bit to JJ Redick. Were there any other people that you were looking up to at that stage in during those developmental years and be like, hey man, if I could add this into my game, you know, this is, you know, this would really help me.
Yeah. I mean, obviously he was the one that, I think, you know, as a young guy, he was the one, but of course, Steve Nash was one of the most fun guys I can remember to watch. You know, yeah, I used to try to stay up and watch his games as much as I could.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Being a short white guy, you know, he was the god, you know, he was the god that you looked up to. And just his creativity, right, yeah, is something that was just out of this world. Vision. It's something, yeah, his vision is something that I don't even know if you can, I don't think you can teach that. That's just a gift. And, you know, right, so watching him do those things was just stuff that, you know, I imagine doing that you try to imitate, but it's, you know, difficult to do, obviously.
Yeah. All right, so you were lucky and fortunate enough to have your parents kind of pull you along, or actually just kind of expose you to things through those development stages and in high school, then, or through the elementary school. Then you get into high school. Talk about your high school career a little bit. I mean, where did you start out? How did you, you know, what levels did you get to?
Right.
You know, what was that? And, you know, what type of systems did you run?
Mm-hmm.
Speak to that a little bit.
Yeah. So high school, again, my father was my high school coach. And, to be honest, as, in Arkansas, your, 10th grade year is your start of the high school career. And, okay, you know, my 10th grade year, I was at a 5A school. Mm-hmm, there was at that time, six classifications in Arkansas. And I'm not sure what they have now. They've switched it up, but, you know, we were a pretty good sized school, and, had a good basketball program there. My dad had built something good in the couple of years that we were there. And, as a sophomore going in, you know, to be frank, I wasn't very good. I was very small. I was very weak. You know, I'd just been kind of, I guess, faster than guys when I was younger. And, you know, obviously I felt like I was pretty skilled, but, you know, when you move up to high school and you're playing against guys that are 17, 18 years old, and I'm, you know, I'm 14 and 15, it was difficult. And, you know, I didn't start as a sophomore. I wasn't, you know, I played, but I didn't start. I wasn't one of the main players, right, but, and that was okay. We were good. We were winning. So, you know, I was okay with that, mm-hmm, but, you know, I knew that's not what I wanted my entire high school career to be. So, you know, I remember going up to my dad after that season and telling him, you know, this is not what I want. I said, let's work and try to get better. And, you know, from then on, I just cranked it up a notch, and you know, I helped that I matured a little bit and got a little bigger and stuff. And I just slowly grew throughout my high school career. You know, junior year, I was one of the better players on my team. We had a very good group, and I actually got beat out in the quarterfinals of the state tournament. And
oh wow, okay,
yeah, got beat out. And then senior year comes around, and again, we've got a just a phenomenal group of athletes and people. and ended up winning the state championship my senior year, and which was the ultimate goal. And, you know, we had built up for 3 years to get to that point. And, you know, a lot of things went into that. We ran the Princeton offense, actually. My dad was you know, we were not the biggest or fastest group, but, you know, we could very, very intelligent basketball players. And, you know, it was the fourth year that the school had ran the Princeton, and third year, obviously, since I'd been in high school. And so we really had a good grasp on the reads and everything out of this offense. And, you know, when you've got five, six guys, seven guys that can come under the floor and score and all pass and shoot, then, you know, you're pretty dangerous. And that Princeton offense was really good for us.
Yeah. So I want to go back to something you spoke about a little bit. You said, you know, after that sophomore year, you went to your dad and you're like, you know, this isn't what I want. I want something more. That seems like that's like a pretty key, like, coaching piece. Like, your dad wasn't pushing you. You came to him like, hey, I want to do it like this. And your dad's like, all right.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, my dad was not easy on me. Like, he, you know, he pushed me harder than anybody, you know, and I would get an earful. But, you know, he knew I wanted to be a good basketball player. But, you know, I just felt like probably I needed to voice that. And, you know, I'd always been a vocal guy and everything. But, you know, I wanted to be better. And that was simple as that. And, you know, obviously, again, maturing and getting a little bit bigger and older obviously helps. But, mm-hmm. you know, when you want something, you have to work for it. And I think that was probably one of the hardest summers I ever worked, you know, and it ended up paying off.
Right. And looking back on that, what was the dynamic with your dad? I mean, I've had a couple of players that I've coached that have also then played for their dads where mm-hmm. they have told them up front, the coaches / dad have told them up front, hey, when you're on the court, I'm not your dad. Like, I'm your coach.
Right.
So
right.
Don't, you know, so even though I am your dad, like, no, it's not when I'm out there, and I'm going to hold you to the standard. So no matter what, there's no right. special treatment.
No. I mean, I promise you, there was no special treatment there. And, you know, but man, me and my dad actually had a great relationship that entire high school career. You know, I've seen guys obviously that after their careers were over that played for the dad hated their dad, you know, and that was right. big problems and stuff. But man, me and my dad, it was kind of a thing where, you know, we were both competitive, and, you know, when it was the gym time, then it was gym time, and, you know, we worked and it was business. But as soon as, you know, we stepped off the court, it was, you know, back to father and son. And, you know, we rarely talked about stuff that happened on the court at home. Also, you know, it was just kind of, we knew it was kind of an unspoken thing that we left it there. And, you know, we always had a good relationship. Yep. And all we do to this day, you know, him and my mother are both, mm-hmm. they're two of my best friends, and we talk every day. And so, yeah, you know, it can be difficult if you let it be, but I felt like we handled it in a very, very, very good way. And, you know, it obviously helps the fact that you win and makes things a lot easier.
Right. Well, and staying in that same subject line, there's other things that you notice sometimes where dads aren't like that. You know, mm-hmm. they're a little bit quieter with their kid, and it does seem to be some type of favor. So it seems as though the ones that I've heard that have been really successful from their kids, they do a really good job separating that, and they're actually harder on them than everybody else because right. they feel like if they can hold them to that standard, then everyone else will kind of fall in line.
Right, exactly.
So it was basically like that. That's kind of how it went.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, don't get me wrong, he was very difficult, very hard on me, but, you know, I wouldn't say it was any extra because he was very hard on everybody else too. I mean, he was a very, very intense guy. But again, yeah, I mean, once that was over. I mean, there was never any, you know, hatred or grudge held towards each other because we both, you know, we both knew what was really important. And, you know, basketball, when it comes to family, is not so important.
Yeah, so give a famous Coach Bolin story from high school, something that sticks out, like, man, I can't believe he did that.
Man, oh, let me think. It was actually one of my good friends, and he was, you know, he was that guy on your team that, you know, he always pushed the envelope a little bit, and, you know, he was always the one to get into a little trouble and stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember it was one of those Christmas break practices where no one wanted to be there, and, you know, we were just – you know, tired and probably had ate too much that morning for, you know, mm-hmm. and, we were just practicing and stuff, you know, things get testy, you know, you get, you know, worked up in practice. And this guy said something to my dad, like, back talking. you know, my dad said, what'd you say? Yeah. And then, you know, the next thing you know, they're nose to nose with each other. And my dad says, go ahead, big boy. He said, you want to take a shot? Take a shot at me. And, you know, you can hear like a pin drop. And it was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? If they start going at it, you know, do I protect my dad or do I protect my teammate, you know? And yeah, ended up nothing happened, thank God. And, but yeah, but that was, that was one of the times I remember the most about those practices.
Yeah. I mean, I feel as though that's something that really couldn't happen today.
Like, oh, probably not. Probably not. I mean, today that would probably make some headlines, but you know, it wasn't so serious, but at the time you were like, oh my God, is this about to happen?
Right. All right. So, I mean, you had a great summer between that sophomore and junior year. So you continued that development. From what I remember you saying before, when we talked, you know, years earlier, you never really played AAU, correct? Like that was something you never really did.
So I did, and not until like I was older though, not until by my sophomore year is when I started playing. And I played going into my sophomore year. But you know, it wasn't, you know, we went to a couple of big tournaments and stuff. And then going into my junior year, I didn't really play. I was more for a local team and we didn't go anywhere. But going into my senior year, actually, I was on one of the better teams in Arkansas, the Arkansas Wings. Okay. And successful program. We had a lot of guys in the class that were very good players and stuff. And so, yeah, it was a good experience. I mean, I'm not going to say that it necessarily helped me get into college because, you know, to be honest, at the end of the summer, I remember not playing at all, like not even getting on the court on the AAU team. But it was a great experience, and I mean, you see some big time players. And, you know, if you any player in the class of 07, I think I saw. I remember OJ Mayo was the number one player, and you know, you got to watch guys competing against them. We never played them, but I mean, you know, the competition you go against was definitely the top.
Right. So if you feel that didn't really help contribute you to, you know, getting to where you went to school, which was Missouri Southern, right? University
yes.
of Missouri. Is that what it is? University
Missouri Southern Missouri State. Southern? Yes. No, Missouri, MSSU, Missouri Southern State University. Yes.
Missouri Southern State University. Right. So, yes. So how did you describe what that recruit just in general, what was your recruiting process like? Who was kind of taking a look at you, and how did you, you know, come to that final decision?
Right, you know, so like every basketball player, you know, you grow up watching the NCAA Division I tournament, and you want to go Division I. You know, no matter what, you want to go Division I, and of course, that was my dream. You know, and I had some smaller Division I's looking at me, you know, a couple local schools, Arkansas State, you know, obviously they, you know, would send a letter here and there. And then Arkansas Little Rock was send a letter and come to watch me in the summer. Jacksonville State in Jacksonville, Alabama. I remember that was a team that was interested at some point. But yeah, I mean, by the end of my senior year, all of these teams had dropped off. I'd stopped getting minutes in AAU. And so therefore, you know, they didn't see me play. And by the end of my senior year, the summer, all the Division I's had dropped off. And, you know, so the Division II's that were interested, you know, I was, you know, okay, you know, I'm okay with going Division II, was this and that. But the one I chose, Missouri Southern, were basically the only school to offer me. You know, I went on a visit to Hardin University, which is a Division II in Arkansas, but Missouri Southern was actually the only school to offer me. And so I went on a visit that fall, and I signed in the early signing period. I felt comfortable and with the coaching staff, and they treated me well and told me what they expected of me. And so, you know what? I said, let's do it. And I couldn't have made a better decision.
Yeah. So talk about what they did from a, you know, tactical point of view, or the way they treated their players, or from a program point of view that appealed to you. That's like, you know what, this is why I think I would be the fit for this program.
Right. I mean, so Missouri Southern at the time, had been struggling, and they had a couple bad years, you know, and the kind of their recruiting pitch was that they wanted to restart completely the next year. You know, they were going to have a few seniors, but that they wanted to just rebuild and restart. And they were going to sign a lot of freshmen coming in, and that I was going to get a chance to play. And if that's all I wanted, you know, and they just you know, really made it a family atmosphere on my visit, I remember. You know, they had good facilities, beautiful facilities, gym and everything. And I knew when I stepped on campus and talked to the coaches and met the guys that that was it. And, you know, all I really needed was the opportunity to play. And when I stepped on campus, I got that.
Yeah, so there's no hesitation whatsoever. It's like you got done with the visit, you're like, yeah, this is
right.
This would be the place to be.
Right, exactly. You know, I could have waited, and you know, I had a good senior year, and maybe Division I's would have been interested. But I just felt so strongly about my decision that I didn't really care after that.
Right. And who was the coach there at that time?
Robert Korn. He actually retired, I think, about 5 years ago. But yes, okay. Robert Korn. He's unbelievable coach. Learned so much from the guy. Great person and great coach. So that was had a great staff all 4 years there. Great relationships with all the assistant coaches. Just was just an unbelievable experience, top to bottom.
Right. So I mean, let's talk about that initial transition. So I mean, you talked about how, you know, when you got into high school at first, you know, in the sophomore year, and you're playing varsity. You know, like, wow, like I'm playing against guys that are a lot older, the bigger, the stronger.
Right.
Geez, like this is another level. Then you get to college.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
it's this constant, you know, you're at the bottom of the totem pole, you work your way to the top, and you're just kicked right to the bottom again.
Exactly.
Like, talk about those experiences once, you know, that first practice where you hit it, and you're probably just like, oh, my Lord.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, I was young for my grade, so I had just turned 18 in July before I got to college. And you know, you look at our team, and we had a lot of freshmen, but we also had a lot of older guys. And I was 18, and then we had like four or five seniors that were like, you know, that had redshirted or something had happened. And I think we had three guys that were like 24 years old, 23, 24 years old, and so they're like 5 years older than me, and they're you know, they're grown men. And you know, I'm sitting there looking like a real 18-year-old. I couldn't grow facial hair. I was skinny as ever, you know.
You still can't grow facial
hair. Right, no, exactly, yeah. I mean, yeah. So it was just, you know, going in, you know, you try not to be intimidated, but you can't help but, you know, to see like, man, these guys are a lot bigger, a lot stronger than me. And so that was definitely the strength part was a transition that I had to figure out and be smart about. But you know, on the basketball court, I always felt like I played a lot tougher than I looked technically, you know, that, you know, I didn't really let that affect me as much as I could, at least, because I was always, you know, I prided myself in playing harder and trying to be tougher than everybody else. But, you know, there were definitely times where I couldn't control that. And, you know, just the stronger man wins sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit as far as, okay, you went in. Yeah, there was this initial shock, but how long did it take for you to be like, no, this is tough, but I'm good. You know what I mean? Like, this is gonna be a journey, but like, hey, like shock and awe is more. Like, how long did it take you to get from the point of like, all right, this is tough, but I got this. I'm
right. Gonna do this fine. I mean, I remember that was probably the second week of my freshman year of preseason. I was ready to cut. I was ready to hang it up. I was so tired. You know, they tried to just, they were trying to build this new culture and everything. And they were just running us and, you know, practices all the time. And I remember we were all just dead, you know, and I'd always worked hard, but this was just a complete different level. And, you know, it was like, man, either 2 weeks in, either put up or shut up. And so, you know, we worked through that and, you know, they brought me in. We had a really good senior point guard that I was going to back up my freshman year. Mm-hmm. They were going to try to just kind of wean me in slowly. And then I guess probably almost halfway through or no, a little over halfway through that first preseason I had, he gets injured. And then it was just they threw me the keys. Oh, wow. And they were like, it's yours. Figure it out. And, you know, nice. Yeah, so that was
– I mean,
was,
obviously it's never nice when someone gets hurt, but at the same time it's like – you know, you see that opportunity, like, all right, let's get it.
Right. Yeah. And that was it. You know, it was like, okay, well, let's go. Let's see what happens. And the very first game that we had was an exhibition game against the University of Tulsa. And that was, you know, their Division I team. They had, you know, they were huge. Exactly. And I had a very good game. I think I had 18 points. And like from then on, I was like, man, if I can do this, you know, right now, like against them, even though it was a preseason game, you know, it's a bit different, but you know, that gave me a lot of confidence. And then from then on, it was just, you know, you continue working and you just get better and better and better. And, you know, I was in a great position to do that. And, you know, the guys trusted me and worked through all of my struggles that I had, you know, cause it definitely wasn't just rainbows and butterflies. You know, I had my down periods, my shooting slumps, you know, games where I was overmatched, but, you know, they gave me the keys and told me it was mine. And, you know, I tried to do my best.
Right. Now, when you were going through that season, and let's see, I want you to speak to a little bit about how, you know, you have the progressions that you go through in high school, and then obviously college is going to be a little bit, if not a lot, different. So, I mean, you know, you had your dad as a coach for quite a long time. You had your high school, you ran the Princeton offense, you jump in over to Missouri Southern. All of a sudden you're kicked in the face with all this conditioning and running and just intensity. Mm-hmm. What were they doing differently than what you were getting in high school, not just from an intensity point of view, but from, you know, a drilling point of view, those type of things?
Yeah. I mean, everything was different, to be honest. I mean, we ran more of a motion offense. You know, mm-hmm. your intensity is the level. We'll say that the level of competition just raises. You know, in high school on my team, three of us played college basketball, and you know, the rest, you know, they're on my senior class, three of us played college basketball, and then there were a couple of younger ones that played. And you know, and then you go to college and everybody's just a lot better. I mean, just it's just how it goes, obviously, you know. And you have to step up every single day, every single practice. You have to bring it or you get embarrassed. You know, especially when I was a freshman, that if I didn't bring that intensity, if I wasn't mentally ready to practice, you know, I would get my butt kicked. You know, and so I think that main thing is, the competition was just so much better every day. And, as far as the, you know, the drills and stuff, it is different, but it's also the same. You know, you work on your dribbling, passing, shooting, and then, you know, obviously it is quite a bit more advanced. That's the stuff you work on at the collegiate level than the high school level. Cause again, guys, you're just better. You know, defensively, obviously it was a big thing. That we worked on, because that we prided ourselves on that as well in college. And you know, toughness was also a key factor to being successful. And I think they did a really good job of preaching that to us.
Yeah, and you were talking about how, like, hey, if you're not mentally ready, you're going to get it handed to you. So, what did you do anything in particular to just, you know, kind of get into that zone, get mentally prepared, so you know every time you step on the floor that you're good to go? Anything, any rituals you went through, or
it's a lot different than it is now, because now I do a lot more stuff. Yeah. But we'll get into that later, I'm assuming. But back then, man, I was into like a lot of visualization. You know, I would try to, before games and stuff, not so much practices. You know, practices you just have to get your mind right, just go, because it's a grind. But I mean, I've always been a guy, like, you know, in my pregame nap, I try to visualize kind of what will happen, you know, situations that happen in the game, mm-hmm. and try to put myself in those situations. And, you know, for me, I think that works. You know, some people may not like that or do that, but for me, I always, before games, should try to visualize any and every possibility that I could get into, and, you know, in my mind, work through those situations.
So when you were visualizing them, were they all successful visualizations? Like you had a success at the end, or was it, were you working through different failures? Were you working through, like, what type of,
it was more like, it was more like a reaction, which reaction would I do, you know, on, you know, if I'm, if we're going against a team, that plays hedge defense, you know, I'm going through all the ways to get out of that, you know, a short roll, a dribble out, a spin back and hit the weak side guy. So yeah, I mean, when I'm visualizing it, it's always going to be successful. That's for sure. But you know, you just prepare yourself for these situations and you think of ways to get out of them.
Okay. All right. And you mentioned, like, we're going to skip a little bit here, but you said it's, you know, what you did then is a lot different than what you do now. Can you just talk a little bit about what's changed and what you do now? You know, obviously you and I, we both know Rainer, And yes. He's been working with you guys, and I'm sure he's brought in a lot of tools.
Exactly.
For everybody that doesn't know, Reiner Meisterjahn, is that how you say his last name?
I think it's Reiner Meisterschaft.
Meisterschaft.
I think so. But now, don't quote me on that. I apologize, Reiner. I apologize.
No worries. Yeah. But he owns a company called Cortex Performance, and he works a lot on the mental game and, you know, works with various clubs throughout Europe, but then also he does individual training. He also does NBA pre-draft workout stuff.
Right.
So he's been able to come in and really help you guys along. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just speak a little bit to that is especially with you and then a little bit about what he's kind of done with the team.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, I still do every single day this, or every single game, this visualization, you know, and just really try to focus on these situations. And, you know, with Reiner, he really helped us as a team. You know, he came in the preseason and he really sat us all down and made us discuss five different principles that we wanted to rely upon throughout the season. And, you know, he really gave us wanted us to set goals and have these principles that when things were going good or bad, we could look back and say, is this the what we discussed? Are these the things that we are relying on? You know, the toughness thing. I think one of our things was have fun and enjoy each other. And he did a great job of communicating stuff and giving us some ideas and thoughts to get through difficult times with each other and also holding each other accountable. And because I think that's a big thing is holding each other accountable on a team. And these things that he helped us with were I thought I really enjoyed it. And Reiner's very good at what he does. And I consider him a good friend now and hopefully can work with him in the future.
Yeah. So how did he hold you guys accountable?
Yeah, I mean, again, the way we had these principles, and I apologize, Reiner, I can't remember all five of them right now, but you know, there were these five different things that we, as a team, decided that we wanted to do. Again, one of them was have fun, one of them was toughness, and for instance, what we decided, you know, we wanted to have examples that we could actually put on paper, like toughness, that if you took a charge. For instance, if one of us took a charge in a game, you know, we decided that we wanted to reward that. And if you took a charge in a game, then every person on the team give you €1, for instance, you know, and like, you know, so you're holding each other accountable and you're getting rewarded for that.
Okay. It was just breaking up a little bit. So to hold yourselves accountable, if a guy took a charge, he got what euro? You broke up.
Everybody, you know, so you took a charge in a game, then automatically everybody on the team would give you €1. Can you hear me? Hello?
Hello? Okay, so you're just talking a little bit about, how Reiner was able to hold you guys accountable. And one of the things you said was, you know, one of the things you guys wanted to do was be tough. You wanted to be a real tough team. So if a guy took a charge,
right,
then it happened. That's where you cut out.
Yeah. So like if a guy, this is just one example. If a guy would take a charge, you know, we decided to reward that behavior. Every person on the team would have to give him €1, you know, and that was just one of the ways to hold, each other accountable and have some fun with it as well. And, you know, we would just have little things like that and little words that we would have up on our board in the locker room to really try to help us remind each other, you know, what we actually stand for and what we wanted to be.
Do you remember those words?
No, I do not. I'm embarrassed. You know, this quarantine has my mind going to mush.
No worries. We'll step away from it. I mean, when's the last time you guys even were able to get together in the locker room and play because of this quarantine?
15 days. We had our last practice March 12th. And then for the last 15 days, there's been nothing. I haven't seen any of my teammates, haven't been able to touch a basketball. So it's pretty frustrating.
Yeah, it's withdrawal, man. I could imagine. All right. So So going off of that a little bit, let's segue back to the end of the Missouri Southern career, or even talk about it a little bit more. I mean, you had the initial shock, you had a pretty successful freshman year. And then from there, talk a little bit about how you grew in your sophomore, junior, and senior campaigns, and what you felt you were able to just really refine. You know, you have those initial years in grade school and high school, you know, you're developing all your fundamentals of ball mm-hmm. handling, dribbling, footwork, shooting, finishing, all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Then you get into college and you have to start refining, and you know, you really have a position at that point where it's right. Like, hey, you're point guard, shooting guard, etc.
Right.
You know, talk about the pieces that you really got better at over the, I mean, obviously you got better at a lot of things, but if there's a top, you know, two or three areas you felt that by the time you got done at Missouri Southern, like, hey, these couple of things got so much better during this time.
Right. Right. I would say, you know, one of the main things was my offensive footwork, shooting off the dribble, those things. I remember we worked so much on footwork, coming off screens, you know, shooting off the dribble, 1-2 step into it, hopping right. into it. Those things. And I think that really helped my shooting percentages. You know, I was always a good catch and shoot guy, but, you know, shooting off the dribble, shooting off the bounce. I think that was something that I really got better at. You know, I think my creating, you know, in college I was, you know, most of the time a point guard. And in high school it was kind of, you know, I did 1 and 2, kind of mix it up. And, you know, being able to read the game and creating for others was obviously a very important thing that I was able to progress year after year. And, you know, by the time I was a senior, you know, I felt like things really slowed down in the game, and I was able to control the game yeah. actually a little bit more, you know, and think it a little bit more rather than, you know, make it such a struggle. Because, you know, when that game slows down and you don't feel like you're going 100% yeah. and you are, then that's yeah. a big difference.
Yeah, no, I vividly remember a conversation I had with my my coach as well between my junior and senior year, at the end of my senior year, as I was trying to go play overseas as well. He's like, you know, at the end of the year last year, I would have never recommended you to play. Like,
right.
No, he's like, but you know, you know, you worked your tail off type thing, and you can see that the game just has slowed down.
Right. You. Exactly. You know, yes.
I was that chicken with the head cut off, man. I was just
yeah, but that's all. That's the whole process, man. That happens, but then you know, yeah. the growth happens. You learn, you know, and it's nice.
Yeah. So going back to you're talking about a little bit off of the shooting footwork, and something I stress this to a lot of trainers and coaches and players and parents as well. You know, you talk about being able to, you know, shoot off of the 1-2 step and off of the hop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, coaches a lot of times, you know, they'll say, well, this is the way you got to do it. And no, this is the way. If you watch any professional league, you have to be able to do both. It's just a matter of
right.
when are you going to take the time to master both of them? Because when you're playing, what's going to come out is going to come out.
Exactly.
So do you feel like that was like those were pieces where those are both focused on, like, hey, today we're working on the 1-2 step. Today you're going to come off of the hop, et cetera. Was
right.
that how they started to break down drills?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was obviously when you learn one thing or the other normally growing up, but, you know, for the most part, mm-hmm. they did let us do what was more comfortable, but, you know, we did break it down also, you know, and for me, I like to learn both because I think it was different yeah. when I was, maybe when I was on the move, it was always be 1-2. And then when I would catch and shoot, I would always hop into it. So for me, I kind of had both. So I wanted to master both or try to master both, you know? But yeah, I mean, we definitely broke it down some, and we really worked on staying low before the catch. I think that was probably one of the main things that I remember from college working on is offensively is staying low before the catch instead of
right.
catching the ball, standing up straight, having to go back down
yep.
and then go back up.
Yep.
I remember we had these, they looked like limbo poles actually. And,
okay.
you know, we would do these drills where we would just have to be running in a squat position and just be low the whole time and get under these poles. That way, when you catch, you just
yeah.
jump straight up. And I remember that was, something that really helped me out. You know, obviously you get your shot off quicker. And, that's definitely the one thing that I remember the most.
Yeah. Right. So the drill you were doing, running underneath the bridge, you know, that's very much what football players do for linemen, being able to go underneath, stay low the entire time.
Right.
And being able to, yeah, just stay low so you have that efficient one motion shot.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
what I was saying before we cut out is, you know, if you look up Skyler online, Skyler space Bowlin, up on YouTube, you're going to see he's super efficient shooter, gets great elevation, no wasted motion. You know, and I tell this story all the time of when I was playing with you at Horsens, where, mm-hmm. you know, I swear that this is my recollection. When we were shooting and you'd go from mid range, you'd go from three. I never saw you go underneath 9 of 10. Like it was, you were so quick with the release and the feet were down every single time. And it was so efficient. It was like day in and day out. I mean, I remember after the preseason there, mm-hmm. I was just like, good Lord, this kid can shoot.
I appreciate it.
You hear those stories of, you know, the guys in NBA and so on and so forth. Like, yeah, man, he hits all these shots. And they, yeah, whatever. And then when you're there and you see it, you're just like, holy good Lord. It's just that level of consistency, man. So mm-hmm. that was very inspiring yet frustrating to see, because I was like, good Lord, like I'm at 7 to 10, I'm at 8 to 10.
Yeah.
You know, and it would fluctuate all the time. And, you know, then I'd have those days where I'd be like 5 of 10 with some things and you're still just, you know, it was crazy. But going off of that, let's talk about that consistency a little bit, because I remember some of the things you were saying as far as some of the other drills that you would do in college. You had one of your coaches was one of the conference leaders all time in scoring or shooting percent, 3-point shooting percentage or something like that.
Yes, Jeff Boshi. Jeff Boshi was I don't even know what year that was, but he was the all time leaders in 3-point made in the Big 12 at Kansas. Mm-hmm. Then AJ Abrams, I remember from Texas, passed him, but I cannot remember what year that was. And now I'm not sure who was up there, but yeah, Jeff Boshi was a unbelievable shooter in college and player for the University of Kansas, mm-hmm. or Kansas University, whichever one it is.
Yeah. So what, and some of the drills I remember you saying was you'd be close to the rim and you would just full elevation.
Exactly. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
One step away from the rim, just full elevation shot. And it has to be, you know, you don't want that little hitch where you're shooting it on the way down, but
right.
You got to shoot it on the way up.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, so that Bosch, I remember he taught me that drill, and it's more about the touch of your shot. You know, you want to be close to the rim and you just, you know, you shoot up and you want to shoot that ball as high as you can. And try to get that touch and with your wrist, you know, flick the wrist and hopefully the ball comes right back down. And I thought that was a really interesting drill to learn and very difficult as well.
Yeah. And so that's another key piece, right? I mean, it's not like a bullet shot. It's like as you shoot it and you get that elevation, you try to make it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, it was difficult. Very, very difficult. And it was ugly at the beginning too, but you know, you feel that difference the more you do it and the easier it gets and stuff, man, the touch on the ball, for sure it helps.
Right. Any other drills like that helped you with the touch and consistency? I mean, footwork, we talked like shooting close.
Yeah. Just, I mean, for me, the, you know, as far as practicing and working out, like I always did everything at game speed. Like I don't like doing drills at 70% speed. You know, even when I'm doing spot shooting, like I can't stand watching people work out and then, you know, they're spot shooting and they're catching it and then they're taking their time and shooting it. Like I don't think that helps, if I can be honest. Like I think that's just, right. You're there just to be there. And that was one thing that I always, that was also one thing JJ Redick, I remember he always used to talk about, was everything he did was game speed. And he worked on stuff faster and faster and faster. And at each level, you know, he tried to perfect it and then he would try to go even faster. And for me, that was always something that I tried to do was whenever I worked out, work out at game speed.
Right. And I'm going to just have a quick point in that piece, because sometimes I see parents do that with their kids and like the kid can't shoot. Like the kid needs to take it a step back. So I just wanted to kind of emphasize a little bit, like, yeah, once you have that shot consistency where you can maybe, you know, where you catch and shoot and it's kind of easy at like 5 of 10, 6 of 10, whatever. And in my opinion, Okay, let's get it to game speed. But if you're, you know, if your elbow's out, if you're not things are all over the place, yeah. I mean, but you'd be surprised at how many people miss that common sense thing.
Right. Like, of course.
If you have a consistent looking shot, yeah, okay, go game speed. But if you're learning how to shoot, bro, like no.
There's steps, obviously. And I said, I wasn't doing that full speed training until I was, well into high school and stuff. You know, like and my shot was, I was strong enough to shoot the right way. I wasn't throwing the ball, there wasn't hitches in my shot. So yeah, there's definitely, I mean, every day when I get in the gym, I do form shooting to this day. As a 30-year-old, nine-year professional basketball player, I do at least 5 minutes of form shooting right beside the rim every day. That's always going to be the basics.
Yep. 100%. All right. So you got through college and you walked away with a few accolades from what I remember. You got some all conference votes. Were you first team that you got to?
Yeah, I was, I don't like to brag or whatever, but yes, I was player of the year in the conference, regional player of the year. And then I was on a few All-American teams as well. Yeah.
Awesome, man. So
the most thing I'm proud of is I was defensive player of the year as well.
Nice. So you play both sides of the court for sure. 100%. So at what stage in your college career is like, I'm this is really great in college, but I think I can get paid to do this. Like I want to do this as a profession. At what stage did that kind of hit you?
I would say not until halfway through my senior year, because I knew nothing about European basketball. The only thing I knew about European basketball was because we had a teammate that was French and he would kind of talk to me about stuff every once in a while. And, I didn't have a clue about it all. But, I was like, this is I can see, maybe going over somewhere for a year if it's possible and seeing if what it's like, but I didn't think that it would actually happen, especially coming from a Division II school. Right at the end of my senior year was when, somebody actually had contacted me about it. And, whenever that happened, I was like, okay, this is actually a possibility.
Let's get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. And so I was like, the opportunity arose and I immediately jumped on that.
So you didn't, from what I remember, you went to Australia first, right? And played in the Big V League.
No, that was the summer after my rookie year. I actually started out in Germany in the second league, Germany Pro A. Yeah.
Okay. Pro A in Germany. And then you had the opportunity to go play in Australia and then you were player of the league down there as well.
As MVP of the finals. Right? Yeah.
MVP of the finals. Right. And then from there, that opened some doors to, to horses. Right.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Keen Tolman, my teammate from college. He was just coming out of, he was a year after me, coming out of Missouri Southern and had signed in Horsens and they were looking for a point guard and we had the same agent at the time. And so that led me to Horsens.
Yep. Yeah, and then So, I mean, you and I both know Arnell, and you know, he's one of your best friends. From what I remember, you guys talk a lot.
Talk to him today.
So what was that like coming over to Denmark? I mean, here's this, obviously Germany's different. There's cultural differences, language differences. Denmark's a little bit different because people speak a little bit more English, but as far as like playing style, coaching style, Arnell, you had this new transition. You're going from this, motion offense, passing, screening, cutting before was Princeton. Now all of a sudden you're in this dribble drive, high intensity drive kick, very European style type offense, and I wasn't there that first year that was, that you guys were doing that.
Right.
Just kind of speak to that a little bit, as far as the learning processes, the progressions,
Arnell obviously is a very, very intense guy. And, I mean, when I got to, when I signed there, he told me, he's like, we have a bunch of young guys and, the expectations weren't so high, but he's like, we want to build something. And, he said, we're going to work hard. He said, I've got, my ideas in my head of how I want to play. And, man, we had a good year though. We overachieved and, when you get there, I remember the first practice, I actually brought two left footed shoes. So that was my very first introduction to the guys. So I had to go home and get the right shoes. But no, I mean, Arnell gave me the keys there as well. It was my second year as a professional. So I had an idea about the European game, but, you know, Arnell let us run a free, just, he was very, very open and very, you know, as long as you, you know, you set up in his system, you know, you do what you do, you know, you create, you drive kick, you know, he's not gonna put handcuffs on anybody. And as the guy who had the ball in his hands a lot, you know, I felt like that was amazing position for me to be in. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. He's an intense guy and I'm an intense guy. So, you know, that relationship obviously I think was very good. And this guy taught me so much, you know, and then we progressed from the dribble drive stuff into a lot of pick and roll stuff and reads. And I mean, he really, really, really helped me progress my game. And I owe a lot to him of why I'm where I am now.
Yeah. And, you know, that was, you know, I only played there for, you know, for a year. And if you want to consider it playing, I mean, it was a difficult year.
There's a lot of injuries that year.
but at the same time, you know, I am very appreciative for that year as well, because the attention to detail, you know, when I don't know what your experience was like, mm-hmm. in college, but, you know, when we were told like, hey, we're playing against a screen, hey, you got to get through this screen. I mean, that's what we were told with Arnell. It was like, hey, if you're on the ball, hey, we're either going to be going over, we're going to be going under.
Right.
If you're guarding the cleaner, hey, you're going to push, you're going to head, you're going to soft head, you're going to ice. I mean, there's all these different options that were, and then not only that, but then we had to, for each player, for each like area that there would be a screen and roll or a screen, it would be different.
Right.
So the amount that you had to think was insane. Like how did that, I mean, for me, that was a huge jump and I learned a lot there. How was that for you in comparison to what like the college game was like for you?
I mean, but that's, you know, you're a professional, you know, that's all you do. Yeah. You know, in college you've got the schoolwork and you've got all this other stuff, but you know, as a pro, I think that's fine. You know, you have one job to do.
Oh, for sure.
And then, it is a transition, because, you know, that's a lot of information, and, you know, some guys process information at different speeds and that's okay too. Yeah. But, you know, Arnell was a guy that had a ton of ideas and very, very, was a guy who paid attention to every detail. And, you know, for me, I loved it. I loved the game planning, the small details on, you know, on different players. And, you know, it does take a lot of focus and a lot of energy, but, you know, there's a reason why we were good as well.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I mean, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want people to think I'm throwing shade at all. I actually loved it. Just is, again, each layer that you get through, each time you go through a different coach at a different level, all of a sudden you have these new details that are thrown out, and they just help you be, you know, that much better at what you do. The better you can think the game, the more you're going to be able to play at higher levels. I mean, it's at the like you know, like we've talked about in the past, like the level you're at now, everybody's so good. Everybody's just right there. It's how well can you play the game upstairs?
Right.
So, all right. So you're in Horsens. Then you had a brief stint in Austria. Then you came back to Horsens, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and then you were there. So all in all, you were there in Horsens 3 years.
Three years.
Eventually won. You won the double, right? You won
the
championship and you won the cup. And at that stage in the last year, that's when you met your current wife, right?
Absolutely. Yes. That last going, in the middle, right, kind of in the beginning of that last year in Horsens is when I met my current wife. Never would have guessed that would happen. And I would be, you know, married to quote unquote, some European woman. But yeah, man, it's been quite a ride, man. Horsens was good to me. I got to say that.
Yeah, definitely. So like, let's take a step away from the basketball just for a second. So what, you know, what are the big, you guys have been together for how long now? It's probably been what, 5 years at least? 6 years?
Almost six coming up.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yep, I got you.
Yep. So how long have you guys been? Yeah, I can. How long have you guys been together for now?
6 years almost.
Yeah, it
is. 6 years. We got married last summer, and I guess this October will be year six, I believe. She's going to kill me if I get that wrong, but yes.
So what do you find, again, non-basketball stuff here, what do you find that's just different as far as, you know, the European mentality in comparison to, like, the, you know, American mentality when it comes to Yeah, just speak to that. There's a lot of...
Lifestyles are just completely different, man. I mean, if you've been to Europe, I think everybody knows, feels that, you know, I feel like everybody in Europe is just a lot more laid back and slowed down. And, you know, the work-life balance is completely different. You know, I feel like in the States, you know, I was... How my family was, at least, you know, we're always on the go. We're never home. And, you know, in Europe, I feel like it's a lot more relaxed and just, yeah, slower is really the only way I can describe it. You know, there's obviously ups and downs to each country, and, but I couldn't imagine enjoying myself any more than everywhere I've been, in Denmark and Sweden and Germany. Now, like, we've lived in great places, and, you know, it's been a great journey so far. So, of course, I miss America, but I do enjoy my European lifestyle right now.
Right. All right. So, I mean, we only got a few minutes left here, so we'll be wrapping up soon. But before we do, I just want to have you talk a little bit, you know, the differences here now that you've gone through between, because from Denmark and Horsens, you went on to Sweden, and then mm-hmm. you played in the different levels in Germany. So in Sweden, from what I remember you saying, the guy again was very tactical. He was
absolutely
a Yugoslavian
yes.
School type coach. And so what was his game planning like? What was his practices like in comparison to Arnell?
Yeah, I mean, as far as mentality, they're the exact same. As mm-hmm. far as the intensity, the details, then as far as tactical, they couldn't have been more opposite. You know, right. Bezran Bosnić, I've learned, I couldn't even tell you how much I learned from this guy. You know, Arnell taught me so much. And then for me to go into a coach like Vedran Bosnić was unbelievable, because his attention to detail on the pick and roll was something that I didn't right. even imagine existed. Just,
and that's after Arnell.
That's after Arnell. Yes, that's after Arnell. Yeah, I mean, yeah. He, our offense was 90% pick and roll. And, I mean, and it was all on, you know, it was me and another backup PG, and I felt like we had the ball 90% of the time a lot. You know, it was a lot of fun, but man, I struggled. Hello.
Okay. Yeah. I'm here.
Yeah. And, you know, I struggled at the beginning. You know, it was difficult. His systems were difficult. We had probably 50 or 60 set plays, if not more. You know, a lot of pressure on you, and, you know, we also played a European competition. So it was a lot to move into, but it was a huge challenge. And, you know, it was just step by step that I had to work my way and gain his trust and, you know, gain my confidence with him. And then by the middle of the season, it all just clicked, and we ended up winning the yeah. Swedish championship. And, just the, again, the attention to detail, and, that's where I really learned how to control the tempos of games and you know, try to control, you know which what each player needs from me, and, you know, what I can do for them. Is it was just a lot more tactical with Vedran in Sweden.
Yeah. So when you're talking about details within the pick and roll that you had never really even thought of before, I mean, what were some of those? I think when we were talking about this a while ago, you just talked about, like, just knowing exactly what the defense was going to be doing,
right.
knowing your exact pass. Like,
right.
Is those are the type of details, right?
Yeah, but, you know, yeah, those are the details, you know, and then there's levels above that, you know, knowing where every player on the court was the next thing. You know, when you're running a pick and roll, you think it's just you and the guy setting the screen. You know, if you think it's 2-on-2, but it's not. You know, you've got to see the backside guy, if he's gonna catch the guy rolling to the basket. You know, you've got to see the weak side. You've got to see the strong side, and, like, that's where I really began to be able to read. Yeah, be able to read, and not only just hit that roll guy, not only hit the weak side. You know, I was able to get those passes to each guy that I needed to, and because obviously, you know, people geared up for us running the pick and roll, and I had to have the answers to that, because they knew what we were going to do. And, man, learning from him and breaking down film with him was just a lot of fun that year. Obviously very frustrating as well at first, but obviously it was a lot of fun.
Right. Right. And, you know, that I think we could probably from this point on have a whole other podcast if we're just talking about, you know, the professional experiences and, mm-hmm. and as you've gotten into Germany and the experiences that you're having there, and maybe we'll do that again another time. But if you just want to touch on, the German league and how you've kind of worked yourself up there.
Right.
And some of the things that you've learned over there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was very lucky to be able to go from Sweden to Germany. I was just in the right place at the right time. And, you know, the German league in my eyes is after Spain, possibly the second best domestic league in Germany, or domestic league in Europe.
Right.
You know, I think Germany, Italy, France, you can argue 2, 3, 4. And, you know, if you want to, you know, sometimes Turkey, depending on, you know, what they have going on over there. But it's been a grind, man. You know, my very first year, we finished, right outside of the playoffs, and it was just to play against guys that have been in the NBA or are about to go to the NBA was wild. Right. I mean, I remember my first year was, who was it? It was Darius Miller, Daniel Tice, Nicolo Melli. They all played for one team here in Germany, and then the next year they were all in the NBA. You know, and to be able to play at a level against guys with that type of talent is one. It's very difficult, and it was not easy. You know, and still not easy. But it just makes it a lot of fun because you know you have to bring it every day, or literally you will get embarrassed. You know, and there's been a lot of ups and there's been a lot of downs. But you know, the journey, the last 4 years in Germany or 3 years in Germany has been, I can't even tell you how fulfilling that's been to finally get to this point where you're playing against some of the best players in Europe. And it's just been, I've been very fortunate to play in great clubs, have great coaches, and then and my teammates have just been unbelievable. And to be able to do it now at the highest level after coming from the Division II school and starting quite you know, quite lower levels is just been such a blessing. And you know, I'm lucky, but I've worked my butt off to get to here, and you know, I'm trying to enjoy it while it's here.
Yeah, and I mean, something that kind of sticks out to me as well, you know, before we get going here, two things that I definitely wanted to make sure that I touched on. Two things that stick out to me about your game. Number one is just the simplicity. I mean, obviously, I mean, you just make things look really, really easy. When you're watching things on film, yeah, you see you just know where everybody is, you know timing, you know spacing. But at the same time, the shots you take, you know, you see all these guys that when they're working with their trainers, like 6-7 dribble combo moves, double right, step no, back, et cetera, et cetera. And it's that's like, life. Bro.
No, that's not real life, man. That's again, like you, I agree with you that very simple. And I think the simpler, the better at times. I mean, it's nice to, you know, go between the legs, behind the back, crossover, spin move, but you know, you're making things a lot more difficult on yourself than they probably have to be.
Right. And it's, I mean, from what I see, I mean, you know, you're going to dribble down, you got the pull up three, you got the pull up for mid range. I mean, you come off the ball screen, you take that 1-2 dribble pull up, you got your floaters, you know, finish with either hand. But then you also have those 1 or 2 moves that you can create your shot. You have that same arm, same leg, step back, you know, going to your right where you can really just pound it and get that guy off you. And then you have that hesitation going both ways as well, where it's like, hey, am I going to go or am I going to step into it?
Right.
And that's, you know, that's the game, and you do it so well and so efficiently.
I mean,
was that by design? Like what led to that being your game?
Right. I mean, again, like, you know, it's great to have all those fancy moves and stuff, but that's just never been what I think is the most efficient way for me to get the job done. And, you know, I think that you can have for every move that you're very good at, I think if you have a counter, you know, if you have 2 or 3 moves that you're good at, then if you have a counter to that, I think it's very difficult to stop. You know, I pride myself in having a hesitation right or left, you know, and if they don't bite, then I have the hesitation right or left pull up. And it's just simple as that. I mean, you know, simple, quote unquote, it's not simple, but you know, I've worked my way to getting to where I feel like I'm pretty consistent at both. And, you know, if you don't stop one, then I'm going to try the other. And so that's, you know, I agree. Like what I do is very simple looking, and, you know, I just don't see the need for me to try to do all the other fancy, crazy stuff that's not for me.
Yeah, exactly. And then the second thing that I wanted to point out that everyone I've ever spoke to you about, you know, whether it be a coach or a player, number one thing they always talk to me about is just like your leadership, your ability to lead, your ability to be positive, your ability to just kind of be bring people together, keep everybody involved, keep everybody positive. Where does that come from? Like, how did you develop those characteristics? What did you actively do, if anything, to really hone in on that skill?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question, but I honestly think that it's just how I was raised. You know, I, parents being coaches, they're obviously natural leaders for me. And, I always believe in being positive. I just don't have a lot of room for. And, you know, I'm probably sometimes positive when I shouldn't be, you know, but I just don't believe in negative thinking. You know, I don't have time for it. I don't think it's necessary. And, you know, any situation that I get in, you know, I'm always thinking of the positive side of it, or at least trying to. That's something that I think is important in a leader. You know, of course I'm realistic with a lot of situations, but you know, I think that there's always positive stuff that can come out of any negative situation. And, you know, I've always been taught that, you know, the tougher you are and the more positive you are, then good things will happen. And that's kind of what I pride myself on. And I try to lead by example that way.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Skylar, I think that's our time. I know you got to get back to wifey over there.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, continue to prepare for the next coming of Luca.
That's right, man. He's coming.
Get things ready, man.
That's right. All man. Right. I appreciate well, you know, it, thanks. Man.
Yeah. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
Take care.
You too. Bye. Thanks for tuning in to our inaugural podcast with Skylar Bowen. If you want to follow him, you can on Instagram. His handle is at Skylar Bowen 12, at Skyler Bowen, Bowlin. And then the numbers 1 and 2. If you want to follow us here at Athletes on the Rise, you can follow us by following the handle at AOTR.training. Again, at AOTR.TRAINING. Okay, at AOTR.training. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and we're looking forward to sending you out more great content going forward, helping you learn and get to the next levels that you want to get to for all you athletes out there. Have a great day.